3, 2, 1.
Bonjour, mon ami. I am your instructor.
Hello, once again, Internet, and welcome to Old Geek, Young Geek. I am Scott Pell.
And I am Steve Johnson.
And we have another guest, whose name is Rob Manuel.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Rob Manuel, you used to write for G4 TV, and I recall him also being the screaming intern.
Oh, that's right. He was the famous screaming intern.
Yeah. Way to go. Way to bring that up.
What other characters did you play on X-Play, Rob? Other than screaming intern.
All the characters I played on X-Play?
The
it was mostly intern characters. Oh, it was screaming intern for sure.
Yeah.
The boy who loved Pokemon. because he was constantly getting beaten up by the Yu-Gi-Oh gang. What else was there? I think there were a couple of other ones that were just big parts, but mostly it was me screaming or dying.
Yeah, I do remember the episodes. You dying at the hands of Adam Sessler or Mark Webb quite often.
Those days.
You've moved beyond those times.
Have I?
Yeah. Well, now you're at USC, and you're working with some game development courses, which are the number one in the country,
yes.
Also I'm told by yourself.
as I did relay to you, yes, before all this began.
But that's pretty exciting. So we'll talk about that and indie games as well, since that seems to go hand in hand with college grads and indie wants.
Pointy head intellectuals
so,
and indie games.
So we'll talk about that later. But first, let's do a throwback to some older Old Geek, Young Geek episodes, and we'll talk about the news.
Yes, the news. This week, Star Wars week. I think all of geekdom was completely aflutter. I would say they were aflutter with the news of a new Star Wars trailer and a new trailer for Star Wars Battlefront.
All right. Yeah, totally. Let's start with the movie trailer. What did you guys think for the second reveal trailer? What were your impressions?
Blown away.
It was... it's great. Like, no. Like, if you watch this trailer, just take the elements of this trailer versus, like, the prequel trailers.
Yeah.
You completely understand, like, why the prequels went wrong and why this is trying to step so far away from the prequels going into it, because this is more about people. You see people in the trailer, and you see things that you recognize in the trailer going into it. And it's much more focused on, like, you could almost piece together the movie in this trailer, but you just want to know more. Like, there's these giant sort of, like, what's going on? Why are these things happening? Like, who are these people? How are they related to each other? Versus the prequel trailers, where it was like big sweeping scenes of stuff that you don't really care about going into it.
The prequels was just stuff, and this left a lot of questions, which is what a trailer should do. It doesn't really sum up the movie at all. There was a lot of questions of who's and what's and where's and why's, and that's fantastic. That's exactly what a trailer should do. It should bring you into that and really make
it like, you know, if you see Han Solo and Chewbacca stepping into the Millennium Falcon, you're telling me you're not going to be like, oh yeah, I got to see that movie, all right. Yeah, Han Solo and Chewie are in it, so it's going to be good.
Did you guys see any of, like, the live streams that were coming from Star Wars Celebration? Like, even before? Oh, my God. So, like, leading up to this big reveal, they actually had a number of the cast out. They had some of the people. They had J.J. Abrams talking about all of this. But they also had the new droid.
The little Rolly guy.
Yeah, the BB. And the thing was, like, everyone thought it was CG. That thing's real.
Really?
Like, that thing actually just sort of, like, bounces around at this ball and rolls all over the place. And the funny thing was that they talked about this, that I guess there was a crew of people who were so in love and so involved with Star Wars that they made R2-D2. And they made, like, a really good replica, and they would always take their replicas and their droids to all the conventions, and they became known as the guys who sort of, like, you know, as a passion project, would make these droids for the convention. And then someone from Star Wars was just like, you, I like your work. Why don't you come work for us?
That's amazing.
And so now they make the R2-D2. They brought out like the actual R2-D2 from the movie. They made the droid that BB that rolls on the ball. I mean, it's, and they even get to name like some of the other droids, like sort of like after themselves. They put their initials into those droids. So now they are forever like emblazoned within the Star Wars universe because of their love of it.
That's amazing.
Hey, can I ask you guys a question about Star Wars? And I don't know if either of you guys are versed enough in Star Wars to know the answer to this one. But does the existence of this next movie mean that all the canonical post-Star Wars ancillary material no longer applies?
Yes.
Oh, good. I'm so happy about that. Supposedly, I'm so happy.
Well, that was one of the big things that sort of came out after the switch between Lucas and Disney. Disney was like, okay, you remember all those books that we wrote, that you guys wrote and like read and like were really in loved with and, you know, went through like in middle school and, you know, that doesn't exist anymore. And so,
I think it's so good.
And people
so
went nuts. People were really unhappy, but I feel like they're going to look back at some of that work and try to bring some of those people, the people that sort of, the things that worked within the books and the series back into the fold, as it were, rather than trying to make something maybe that's new or trying to make something work, because that's a lot of history that they're, it's sort of like, you know, like comic books every so often have to just sort of like relaunch.
Yeah, they gotta clear the boards.
Actually DC and Marvel are doing that right now, where they're completely clearing the boards, they're clearing the slates, and you know, whatever happens after this year is going to be like the new start off point.
Comic books are a little different going though, forward. Because comic books are the story. You know what I mean? But with movies,
right.
I mean, Star Wars, the movies are the story, and then the novels are some other thing, and they're not made with the kind of care or thought that the movies are made with. So
I don't think that's true at all.
You're terrible, Scott. I'm sorry.
novelization. I'm sorry.
I'm wrong.
So Hold on. Steven Johnson, let's just put this out there. You are now defending with this position episode.
I know I am. But
you are absolutely saying that Jar Jar Binks and the pod race that lasted forever was built with more care and love.
I'm not though.
Than some of the books.
Well, I mean, I guess I kind of am, but at least look those movies, like them or hate them, those three movies, and I don't think they're very good movies, but they're Lucas's movies, right? It's his universe. That's where he wanted it to go. That was his thing, you know. Like for whatever reason, those are the films that he wanted to make, and I hate them, but the difference with novels is that's just some dude that they hired to write a book. Like, who is he to write to say what happened to Han Solo after Star Wars? You know what I mean? Like,
he's a fan, and he had passion and care about these characters. Like, that's why he decided to write an entire series. I mean, like, there are some great writers and some great Star Wars novels. I mean, like, Timothy Zahn is a pretty recognizable name among those books. And they've created some characters that resound beyond those books, such as Mara Jade. Like, I don't even know who that is, but, like, I know that she's a major Star Wars character.
She
He's
has
also
to
a
come
badass.
Back. She has to come back. Like, that's the whole point.
She
like, everyone's
will
just
make it into these, you know, this coming trilogy, and I'm excited to see that. But I think, like, to destroy all of that, like, there's so much there, and some of it is so rich, some of it is so good, and some of it's bad, but yeah, you're gonna get
bad. But you
can
still enjoy it.
It's just what happens.
It's still the books.
Yeah, you can still enjoy it. It may not be official canon, but, like, the books are still out there, and you can still, like, rent them from a library, or buy them from an old, you know, thrift shop, bookstore, what have you,
but
like,
it puts them in the right position as fan fiction.
Underground
bookshop. It puts them in the position that they're supposed to be, which is that they are fan fiction.
But they were were authored by like the company. Like George Lucas was like, sure, we need books to go along with this, and they yeah. had a company and they had a part. It's not like some guy was like sitting around the other day. It was just like, I wonder what happened to Chewie's kids, you know? Yeah, after
I'm
the
gonna
Christmas,
write a, I'm going to write a 1200 page fan fiction about
you know,
Chewbacca.
I think that this really comes down to my own personal
how many life
blanket.
Days.
I just don't like ancillary material. I don't like extra material. I don't like. I just don't like any of that stuff. I feel like it really takes away from the subject. I feel like it makes art worse by watering it all down. I hate all that. I can't stomach any of that stuff. I hate it. And everything. I've never seen any of it that I liked. I've always just been like, yeah, this is some second rate thing. Because look, as somebody who does creative work myself, I got to say this. Luke Skywalker doesn't exist except in the three movies he's in. You know what I'm saying? Because those movies are his character. The structure of those movies are his character. And the themes of those movies are his character. He's not a person who can do something outside of the structure that is the character that Lucas created. So every time you see him in some other structure, it's like, no, this doesn't work. It's like when they do crossovers on TV shows and somebody comes from the Flintstones to be on the Jetsons. And you're like, well, wait, that doesn't make any sense. So, but it's like that, except for writ large, because it's like a whole novel that has a main character that doesn't make any sense for whatever novel it is, you know? Because characters aren't people, they're just characters. They only exist in their own fictional universes.
Yeah. You get so upset for these characters that are existing in other people's universes.
All right.
Steven, yeah, let's go.
Sorry, yeah. Steven, that's a bigger, larger topic than we are going to talk about.
That's a larger topic. That's a personal topic.
But I'm super excited for the new Star Wars. Oh my God. Come on.
Okay. Oh my God. All right. Steven, I think that you are taking this whole expanded universe thing too literal, and you're wrong, so moving on to the next topic.
One thing old geeks have to be is curmudgeonly, no. Okay? So I've got to uphold old geek ethos by being like, I hate it, and stay off my lawn. And worst.
Okay, fine. We'll stay off your lawn, old man Johnson. Let's talk about Star Wars Battlefront gameplay trailer that was released on Friday. Oh my God, I'm so excited! Holy crap!
Battlefront.
Oh wow! Like I have. Oh wow! I would hate to say that I have no words, but after I watched that trailer, I just yelled of excitement. I just couldn't stop. It was so. I was so amazed and so excited just to see. The classic map of the Endor villain, and even though like that was like a pre choreographed cutscene, like it was still rendered within game engine, and then they showed like actual gameplay of Boba Fett flying around with his jetpack. There was a dogfight in Beggar's Canyon. Oh my goodness!
Oh God! And, like, you need a moment.
Oh wow! And then like he called like bombing strikes from Y wings, or maybe like those are actual players like in the Y wings, like flying in uniform, which they wouldn't do in multiplayer because it's chaos. But you could still have that potential of like we have an AT-AT here, bring in the Y wings and we'll bomb that, and then like Darth Vader will be driving that thing and just pop out like I've got a lightsaber. You guys are screwed now. Dogfights! They brought back vehicles! I'm so excited to have, like, you know, ships and stuff flying overhead while I'm, like, running on the ground capturing bunkers and stuff like that. Oh, I love Battlefront so much, and I hope that, like, DICE doesn't screw this up with, like, stupid DLC packs and just, like, shipping half the game and, like, breaking it immediately as soon as it's launched with, you know, patches and, like, unfinished servers and stuff like that. So that's what I'm worried about the most. Is that it'll just be, like, Battlefield but reskinned as Battlefront, and that makes me sick. Yeah, so I just hope that DICE and EA don't screw up Battlefront with their nonsense that they do with Battlefield. That's all I'm saying.
What kind of nonsense specifically are you talking about that you want to not see?
Well, when Battlefield 4 and even Battlefield 3, when those games launched, the servers weren't ready. You couldn't get an online match. And I don't think that this new Battlefront game will have a single-player mode that players can go through. So it's just going to be purely online, which is another topic of, you know, why are they releasing multiplayer-only games at full price at $60? That's kind of ludicrous.
Because people will pay that much.
I paid that much for Titanfall, I'm not going to lie. But Titanfall's amazing.
See, that's exactly the point. You're asking the question, okay. It's like, why are people paying $60 for just a multiplayer game? And then it's like, oh, you paid $60 for a multiplayer game? Well, there you go.
Yeah.
There's your answer.
Yeah. I did.
It seems like a funny decision for them not to just slap on some campaign.
I know. Because like
just for the people that are like, yeah, I don't really play multiplayer.
Yeah, I mean, like,
I guess you can't really just slap on.
That used to be the way. Old days where you just didn't have that much multiplayer and you didn't have, you know, you didn't think everyone would go for it. Not everyone had the fastest connection. You would just slap on like a single player and hope for the best.
I think it was the opposite.
I feel a little bit like that's what Destiny did.
Because
that's really a multiplayer game, even though it has a single player campaign.
Destiny is different. I feel like they at least, it's an MMO. Like they're trying to make the MMO, like the first person shooter MMO going into it. And yeah, like 90% of it, like any sort of MMO is going to be multiplayer, you and your friends going through dungeons, quests, and so on and so forth. But there's the 10% that sort of has to be like, okay, I need you to walk around this place in order to get a feel of it. So you don't get lost when you have your four other friends or two other friends, like, in your raid party shooting at stuff.
Oh, right, right. So you think that was really the function of the single-player camp or the single-player plot was to get people familiar with the locations that they would be going to?
Yeah, I mean, that's what they do with a lot of single-player campaigns, like, for most games going into it, where you do have a single-player... Like, if we did, another game such as this, where you would have, like, different maps, like, large areas, you could have, like, a single-player campaign where it's just like, oh, I need you to run over here, and now I need you to run over here, and I need you to take over this spot, and just have, like, light story elements, like, moving you from place to place. That's how things usually work.
The thing is, though, that I think... that most companies, when they have a strong focus on the multiplayer element of their game, it seems to be that they treat the single-player campaign as some kind of tutorial for the multiplayer, which just isn't. It never is. You can never predict what's going to happen on multiplayer. Like, at most, say, with Call of Duty, it'll teach you how to point and shoot. That's about it.
That's fine, but, like, it's... For multiplayer campaigns, like, a lot of people expect, like, there's a weird sort of level of competency as you're going into it, as you're assuming that everyone is familiar with everything and knows exactly what you know going into something. And so you get a lot of toxic behavior when you see people, you know, who expect you to know X, and there's no way for you to know X. And so they start yelling at you, being like, why are you even here? Because you're screwing, you know, everyone depends on you to know this going into it. That's why, you know, a lot of Dota style, like League of Legends, sort of games have like sort of a single player or a botted campaign that you can sort of just play on your own to get proficient to a certain level so that you can play with other people going into it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rob, if you were a regular listener to the Old Geek Young Geek podcast, you'd realize that the toxic behavior was already discussed on episode 6.
So we had Mike DeLonzo on because he's as toxic as they come. Take that, Mike, in your brains, now that you're not here to defend yourself.
Okay. Any other thoughts on Star Wars Battlefront?
I love Mike. He's a great man. He just sucks at video games. That's all. I'm sorry.
No, good. Let's...
Rob, can we talk about USC? Because you have like a real man's job.
Is that what I have now?
Wait, you have like a real job. Yeah. Like you're real.
I'm a real boy now.
That wraps up the news. Let's talk about the USC.
Rob, tell me what your position is at USC.
USC, I am the undergrad advisor to the Interactive Media and Games Division. In the Cinema School of USC.
All right. Which is the University of Southern California, as super producer Robin just pointed out.
Yes.
For anybody who doesn't know.
So yeah, we are currently ranked number one for game design in the nation for undergrad, as an undergrad major. We also have an MFA program that's also highly ranked going into it as well. And we basically teach students how to make games from scratch. So it's a very interesting sort of course. It's a very interesting sort of way of looking at things because it used to be that when you talked about like video games, everyone thought about coding. everyone thinks about like putting together like building blocks and things like that. The way things should look and the way things should move and a level should look like this. And if you're going to shoot a person, it should like go like this going into it. And even though we do have coding and we do teach all the students coding going into it, it's more of an art focused sort of design going into it. And so it's more about like, what can video games do? What can kind of stories can you tell for video games? Like what kind of,
that makes me really excited to hear.
What kind of, kind of things would you like to do in a video game that you don't see now? And it is a lot of like pushing technology, which is one of the things. I know before we started, you were asking about VR technology. And, you know, with all the VR that's coming out, Oculus Rift, Sony's VR, Vive from Valve, we pretty much have like someone behind, you know, someone on each of the teams who actually came from USC working with them or working on projects that has to go along with it, because it's a lot of, we give the students, you know, the new technology, we give them like new things, and the thing is, they try to do things that they don't see other places going into it. So
that's awesome.
And it's really cool. And the thing is, like, what's also really cool is we also teach a lot of things where it's not like just video games, it's also card games and board games.
Nice.
Where a lot of the students actually make a full board game their sophomore year, and they actually get to see it printed out. They get to see like all the cards done in a sort of a nice display. Like it's a really fun thing. And the kids there are always making games. They're always working on something. They're always doing something. Even freshmen who have no coding skills, have no sort of experience going into games, will jump on like a senior project like immediately because they just want to work on something.
Wow. That's really amazing. I have a few questions. Sure. So you said that you focused on video games as an art. Do you focus more on the gameplay, the story, or do you just let them have free reign? Do you encourage them in one direction or the other? Do you give like some guidelines of like anything? Or
There is guidelines. The guidelines mostly focus on how to actually produce a game, how to actually put a team together, how to communicate with your team, what each member of the team should do, as well as sort of like addressing different issues within the industry. One of the biggest things that is sort of causing a lot of harm within the industry itself is called crunch or crunch time. Which you probably know about, where it's everyone works really, really hard for long hours and for often a long period of time. And so one of the things that they teach and one of the big lessons that a lot of our students get out of this is like how to scope their project, how to make, you know, when they think about a project, they have like 20 something designs and they want to make a billion levels and it wants to be all open, you know, procedurally generated, and you can roam this whole universe, and then you just sort of have to rein that back in. And it's like, look, you have a year to make this game. How are you going to do this? What are you going to put in? What are you going to leave out in order so that you can do the best game, but you don't kill the people who are working for you going into it? Because a lot of people drop out of the industry because of crunch. A lot of people see it as, you know, you can't have a family or a life outside this sort of like world that you're living in because you're working all the time. You have no life. You're not seeing daylight most of the time. And then like as soon as you're out of crunch, you're into the next project. And then it's like,
you know, it's weird. It's like that with a lot of those kind of glamour professions on this, you know, game making, filmmaking, that kind of thing, where like people really want to do it.
But the thing is, it shouldn't have to be that way.
Accountants can't. You can't tell an accountant he's got to work 12 hours a day because he'll be like, no, I don't.
Yeah, yeah, but he does during tax season.
There's certain points, and it's one of those things that I know companies who have done crunch for a year. And
that sounds
absolutely awful, and you're not supposed to do that. And so, back to your question, do we teach the students exactly what they should be doing, and you know how, like, it's not a matter of like you should be making a platformer, you should, if you do a shooter it should have this, or if you're doing a story game it has to have a three act structure going into it,
right.
We teach all of that. If you want to learn about story, we have great, we have some great professors who used to be writers. Danny Bilson actually teaches stories in games. He used to, he was a writer for The Rocketeer. He does, he used to be at THQ. He's done some fantastic things. We have Rich LaMartian, who was at Naughty Dog. He did all the Uncharted series going into it. I mean, we have,
wow,
we have all of the, I mean, really, it's like we have like some of the best people from video games coming in.
That's,
teaching these kids really how to amazing. Make video games, but not necessarily teaching kids what they need to be making. And they come up with some amazing things out of it because they're just sort of given free rein to explore different ideas and different possibilities going into it.
Totally. What are some of the tools that you guys use? You talked a little bit about coding and stuff like that, and that's how games used to be made. But now a lot of students have a lot more available to them, such as the Unreal Engine or Unity or things such as available as that. What does your curriculum use?
Anything and everything. Basically, Unity. I mean, Unity and Unreal are pretty much your bread and butter. When it comes into it, mostly Unity, because you can move it from place to place fairly easily, from mobile to PC to console, going into it. A lot of the smaller sort of consoles, like an Ouya or an Amazon Fire or whatnot, also use Unity as well. And so we want to make sure if they're making a game, they can find the right platform for it. And then if they want to move out of that, you know, if they want to use, you know, if they're making something for Xbox One and they want to be like, oh, we want to take this and over to Unreal or to Source or whatever, you know, they can do that, or they can start working on that. But to at least have like something that's working, something that they can sort of play around with going into it. Other than that, I mean, it's like I said, I mean, it is whatever tools we can get there, you know, sort of like lend them. Get their hands on. We do a lot of stuff with console debugs. We do things with the Oculus Rift. Again, you were asking about the VR. We actually, what's really cool, we had a student game that's actually won a couple of awards. It's called Clojure. And it's Clojure. It won for the student award for the IGF, the Independent Games Festival, this year.
Okay.
And Clojure... Nice. There's a little camera that's attached, that's sort of looking at your eyes, and it's in during the gameplay. Every time you blink, you sort of move forward in time, so you are sort of reliving your life going into it, and by blinking you travel forward, and so you sort of have to become very aware of the way your eyes work, or the way you're blinking, or like when you're doing something, because as soon as you blink, all of a sudden that scene that you were in the middle of is gone and you're in a new scene.
Wow.
And the things that you do in that scene will affect the next scene, because you're sort of seeing your life again from the very beginning. And so everything that sort of transpires at the beginning sort of has consequences towards the end going into it. And that's
a really
mind without even seeing the game. I'm like, oh,
that's a really amazing concept. That's like a really intense staring contest. But that's a really unique concept.
See, that's what I would have done with the thing. I would have just been like, okay, my game is called Super Staring Contest, and it would just be another guy, and you're just staring.
Yeah.
So that's why I didn't go to USC to study game design. And maybe if I had, I wouldn't come up with dumb ideas like that.
So, like, you were really praising the students for their innovative creativity, and it really reminded me of, like, the late 90s, early 2000s, where game developers were just trying new things with, like, the 3D technology that was available at the time, with the N64, the PS1, and the Dreamcast. Like, those were some really imaginative games. What are some really amazing things that you've seen come out of your students? Like, what are some cool things? Like, just brag about your students that you've seen.
Let's continue.
Yeah.
So back to the IGF. So the IGF awards, not to, you know, I'm gonna pull this all the way back as we're going into it, I swear. So the IGF awards are like the big sort of awards hosted by game developers. So all the game developers get together, they start voting on awards. It's a big deal going into it. And so there's a main award that goes into it, and it was like big, you know, studios with people who've done like AAA work, and they want to start to move out. This War of Mine, which was like such an amazing game last year that I love, was up for like the main award. Like these were like big retail titles that they were looking at, big retail titles in the indie scene that they were looking at. And then who wins but this student game that comes out of our program called Outer Wilds, where you have 22 minutes before the sun sort of explodes in your world to explore this universe, and you have free reign to get into your rocket ship, fly off a planet, and then get to another planet and just sort of explore that planet and sort of see the stories and the life and the things that are happening in that planet going into it, which is a really sort of amazing and wild ability to do, that you really feel like you're moving from place to place. You feel like you're moving to like a completely new world. Like you do have the whole universe to explore, and you're chasing down these planets or comets or, you know, whatnot. And you're finding these little bits of story that are being left behind by civilizations going into this, as it were.
But you only have 22 minutes.
Yes, they only have 22 minutes. So like you,
wow.
And, oh, and, really
and so like you're not given a lot of time to sort of like, you know, you're trying desperately to like to get bits and pieces of it, but they're like, all the worlds are really cool. Like there's this one world that's like almost like a ball of water, and there's like little islands on top of it, but there's storms, and there's like a water spout that like, you know, goes across the world and travels around randomly. But if you dive into the water, there's also like temples underneath, and there's like other, you know, other things swimming by, and it's just like a really amazing, like every place you go to has such a unique feel and a unique sort of space to it. And you can actually download it for free right now if you really wanted to check it out.
I do.
It's you
I'm
just
going to.
And where can you download
it? You can download
it
if you go off to the IGF website. You can find their main site going into it. And I believe Outer Wilds has their own site. If you just look it up, maybe perhaps Outer Wilds .com, as it were, going into it. But it's not even a finished game. Like, this is like an alpha. This is an idea that they came up with. And they're looking to polish it off, you know, put more things into it, like, really create like a world, really create
an entire
universe going into it. But like they've done like an amazing job of like setting things together.
That's a really cool concept, because like it doesn't, I mean, like it's not something that you can just marathon. It limits your playtime. So maybe it's just like, oh, I'll get a quick game of Outer Worlds in
Outer
before
Wilds.
I have to do this, whatever.
Yeah.
Outer Wilds. Outer Wilds.
No,
I'm sorry.
No,
I'm sorry.
It's perfectly fine. To continue on. So, BAFTA happens to have, BAFTA is sort of like the Oscar.
Isn't that the British Actors?
The British Academy of Film and Television Arts.
But they also have a video game section.
Yes, they do. And Stanley Parable won an award for that. At that.
Yes. But they also have like a small sort of, they had like sort of a game jam. So a game jam is basically where a bunch of people get together and they start to build a game in a very short amount of time.
Do you have class game jams?
A little bit. We do have classes where people build games over a short amount of time. Sometimes it's a semester, sometimes it's like over a month. We participate in the Global Game Jam every year, and I believe this year we were one of the largest sections of the Global Game Jam in the United States. There were more people sort of like crammed into our building than anywhere else making games going into it.
That's pretty intense.
And so for BAFTA, they happen to have these games. And if you go there, it's called the Ones to Watch Award. And one of our students, a team of our students actually won the BAFTA for that. And it's called Chambara was their game. And it's a multiplayer, it's a one-on-one sort of game that you play where the world is black and white. And your characters, one character is black and the other character is white, or purple and gray or green and whatever other color it is.
Yeah, it's two-tone.
It's two-tone. And so if you happen to be the character that's one tone and you're standing in the space that's the same tone as you, you pretty much disappear. No one sees where you are. And so basically it's this game of hide and seek where you're always sort of like looking to see where you can go and where you can run and where you can jump and hide and like attack the other person, and they're with swords, and so you have to get very close to the other person in order to attack them.
That sounds awesome.
Wasn't there a bigger game that came out recently that had that same sort of mechanic?
It reminds me a lot of a game called Nidhogg, where it's like a dueling sort of
Nidhogg
game.
Yeah, Nidhogg is like it's a dueling, but that's more.
No, I mean the thing with the colors. I know it did, and it's making me crazy. It's a Nintendo game, or it's an upcoming Nintendo game that uses a similar.
Splatoon.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, Splatoon.
That's the one. That's the one. Splatoon.
I'm looking forward to that one as well. It looks like fun.
Splatoon looks like it's a lot of fun, but that's more of a team based. You're having to like roam around in your own color, and you're not.
Yeah.
You can still sort of dive into that color, but it's a little bit more or less. Heidi and more actiony going into it.
This game that you're talking about, it really reminds me of. Did you guys ever watch the cartoon Samurai Jack?
Oh yeah, completely.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Yeah, that show was awesome, and they had this one episode where there was a black ninja, and Samurai Jack clothed himself in his white robes, and like the sun was shifting, and the light was changing, and like Jack would hide in the light, and the ninja would hide in the darkness, and that sounds like a lot what the game you're describing would be, which makes me totally excited to play that as well. And that won the one to look out for in the BAFTA Awards.
So they got to actually go to the UK. They went to the BAFTA Awards and they accepted the award while they were there.
Ritzy.
Going into
very
it,
ritzy.
And they're still working on it as well. Like this is a game that they're looking to. Put out for retail going into it, and they're really excited.
Totally. That's totally awesome.
Hey Rob, you have described many younger listeners, I'm sure, their dream environment where everybody's around playing games and potentially winning BAFTA awards in this incredibly creative environment where well-known mentors are guiding them toward the career of their dreams.
That's what I do.
Okay, so let's say I'm 15 years old.
Okay.
And that's what I want. What do I do to get it?
Well, actually, it's fun.
I mean, what do I study in school? You know what I'm saying? Like, what kind of background are you? Because it's got to be
it's
a competitive program, right? So
it's
what kind of people are you looking for?
Program. I was actually talking to a middle school just the other day. So this works in perfectly. So the answer is do well in school, get good grades. Make sure you have a high GPA. But here's the secret. Here is like the real secret to the whole thing. Make games. Like just make games.
Yeah.
Just like right now, like if you're listening to this and you're 15-year-old, 16, 17, 18, 27, 38, 42, anything, just make games, because it's not necessarily, you don't have to make like the shiniest AAA game in the world. That's not going to happen.
Right.
But if you make a card game or a board game, like that's an amazing start. And that's such a huge deal right now too.
Or even like a video game, because like we were talking about earlier, like with Unity, Unreal, and Source Engine, you have the tools to make a game on your own. It's going to take a while for sure. But if you got a team, like I think that showing up with a pretty strong portfolio of things that you've made to enter into this program would be a lot stronger than getting like good grades in high school.
Well, getting good grades in high school is very nice to have as well.
That helps, but like how many people, like I certainly didn't put forth much of an effort into high school because I just didn't care. And sure, like if I wanted to make games, like there wasn't much of an opportunity for that in my high school. So I wouldn't feel motivated to make games. I mean, like going from like an independent perspective, like I don't know, I think there's a lot of people out there who are not really motivated to, you know, do well in high school because they just don't care. But they want to achieve great things, you know? And I think that they have the will and the passion. It's just like, you know, school doesn't really matter to them.
But it's the same argument that anybody in any creative field that you would say, or the same guideline, which is like, hey, you want to make movies? Go make some movies. Because that's all that... And, you know, like, you might not get into USC if you don't have very good grades because you spent all of your time making movies or making video games. But you can work in either industry without a degree. Just so you know, I know plenty of people in both industries that don't have a degree in anything because they just went and made movies. Yeah. So now they work in movies. I'm sure video games works the same way. That nobody really. If you know what, if you come up with Minecraft, nobody's going to ask where you went to college. So that's just the other side of the coin. Although, man, you get so much out of a program. It sounds like at USC.
It sounds like a lot of fun, and I would.
For the people that you meet, too, not to mention the actual experience.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
what's really great about the program is that you're making games constantly going into it, and it gives you sort of this safety net, as it were, going into it. So, you know, I know a lot of indie developers who are working on games now, and it's like, this game has to sell, or I don't have, like, my rent for next month, or something like that.
Yeah.
Versus, like, you're in college, and it's like, if this game doesn't do well, then there's someone there who can tell you why it doesn't do well. Maybe you can work on it again. Maybe you can work on a different game going into it. And it's just, like, it gives you a chance to go through all of those failures without the consequences, necessarily, of those failures. Really, hampering your ability to, you know, work on the next game or figure out, like, where you're going to eat next.
Yeah.
Right, because making any game is an incredibly time-consuming process, and if you make one that's no good for whatever reason and nobody wants to play, there goes all that time.
That's my next question, Rob. What advice does your program give to students to... I don't know, because, like, it's rough getting out there and making your game be able to sell well.
Sure.
What does your program give to students who, you know, like to ensure that their game is successful, or to help at least, not necessarily ensure, because I'd be lying.
That's a tough question because the you know, quantitative what is successful is always like that big question. Is your game successful because it sells a million copies, or is it your game successful because it gets you a job somewhere? And that's always the big question going into it. When I'm talking to students, I always work on the game. I tell them to work on the game, figure out what is the heart of the game. What are you trying to do? What is really like the moment-to-moment experience that you're trying to give the player going into it, and then to go from there. If they feel like the game is not working for them, to maybe work on something else, to try out something new, like to do a quick jam with someone or to show it to someone else going into it. The answer is there is no answer to what makes a successful game going into it. There's games that we can be like, a lot of people want to play this. There are going to be games where it's like, I'm very interested in this. But when it gets out into the wild, like a lot of people, especially now, are finding that success is not necessarily a formula that you can just sort of like give someone or a matter of advice.
Yeah, for sure.
We do have... I mean, one of the nice things we actually have is we have a number of business classes to go along with the major. So you can take the business of video game management going into it, and so you actually know where all this money is going. Or you, we have classes that just teach you about like how to move a game from one place to another, or to set up, you know, to set up a company for your game going into it. And we have that. We can, you can take that class actually with another class where you actually build a game. So you can actually build a company along with your game going into it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it comes to that. Wow. It comes to, you know, how you define success.
Are these students overwhelmed by how many courses they're taking? Because making games is very time consuming. And I'm sure that the students want to make a game that is enjoyable and is something that they're proud of. And that will take a lot of work to put in all those finer details. Do they ever get... I'm sure that they get stressed out from just making the game alone, but like they also have to take in other classes as well, I'm sure, right?
I mean, it's... that's a number of different things going into it. Yes. Yeah. Students get stressed out because they're taking a lot of classes. As they do. Yeah. But also the answer, I will actually go back into your question and be like, no, a lot of these students are not making games alone. Once they get to a certain level, they are making games with groups, and not just like small groups, not like just three or four of them, but they can have a group of like 25, 30 other students
who
are working in the game. And like, they have programmers, they have their artists, they have their engineers, they have their producers, they have sound, they have music, and they're pulling people from all over the campus in order to do this. Like, we have a great music program at the university, and so they're pulling people in from the music program. We have a great animation program in the cinema school, and so they're pulling people from the animation program in order to get help. We have a great, you know, screenwriting program, and they're pulling in people from the screenwriting program to write the stories for their games. And it's, so it's not that they are in it alone, because a lot of, I mean, most games are not made by one person. More games, I mean, some games are now, but most games are made by like bigger teams. And so these students are getting to learn like firsthand, what does it take to manage, you know, 10 people, 15 people, 20 people, 30 people. Like, how do you keep communication going? How do you keep deadlines? How do you set up like goals? How do you set up, you know, when is our alpha coming out? When's the beta coming out? When is it going gold? When is all this stuff like happening in the process of making the game? So they are making a real, I mean, they are making a real game. They are like, you know, doing the same things that bigger studios are doing.
Cool. Yeah, very cool.
Well, hey, Rob, we've heard a lot about some of the things that USC offers, and also some of the cool indie games that are coming out of USC. But I know that outside of your gig, you are also into the indie game, the larger
that
indie game scene, right? So I got to ask you, for my own personal edification, what indie games do I need to be playing?
Five Nights at Freddy's.
Five Nights at Freddy's.
That's what I always hear. I always hear about Five Nights at Freddy's. I
gotta play that. No, no, don't. Let's no,
don't do it. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Look, here, like, here's.
now you're toying with me
because
you're...
the fact is, like, we have so many games now. Like, to tell you, like, this personally is one of my favorite games, you should be playing it, doesn't necessarily come. Yeah. I mean, you're Steven Johnson. Like, what Steven...
Yeah,
what,
right.
What
I
Steven
guess
that's
like saying, what song should I be listening
the same
to?
Thing
Rob I don't
Mangan
know what
loves.
Song you should be listening
so
to.
So the question comes down to, what game do you want to be playing?
What kind of...
me and you're like, Rob, I want like an old school turn-based RPG with like a really deep story and like a huge world for me to explore. And I'd be like, great, Steven Johnson. Let me tell you about Pillars of Eternity, where it's made by like Obsidian, the guys who've been making AAA games for all this time. They decided to like go back and like ask, you know, basically go back to their roots and try to write this like huge, this huge world where you can explore and you can figure out things going into it. And you're like, okay, that's fine. But maybe you're like, Rob, I want to play a space game. I want to like fly throughout space. I want to shoot people down. Like, that's my thing. And I'm like, great, Steven Johnson. Let me tell you about Elite Dangerous. Elite Dangerous is probably one of the slickest looking space games out there right now, where you are going into massive battles. You are fighting like giant ships. Like, you are just like, this is that space game that everyone like sort of dreams about until Star Citizen comes out, where Star Star Citizen is every game like put together into a blender and served up to you. And it is it, if they can actually pull it off, it will probably be like the last game you ever need to buy.
That's possibly true.
Do you think they're gonna though? Do you think it's gonna be as good
No, I don't think so. Because from what I've seen, like, there's just so much behind
There's
a lot of money and there's a lot of hard drive space. I've heard that it's going to take up 100 gigs.
You are just going to buy a new computer for it.
Yes, totally. And also, like, the fact that they are showing off their new ships by just allowing you to sit in them. Like, that's how they show off their new ships.
Right.
Like, they have a luxury cruise liner type of ship where, like, you have a nice captain's chair, you have two seats for your co-pilots and gunners, you have a top turret, you have a bottom turret, you have a luxurious bedroom with a mini bar and a bathroom, and you can't fly that ship, but you can walk around inside of it. Also, there's a moon buggy. Here you go. You can't drive it, though.
That's why you should play Elite Dangerous, because it's already out.
And so you should play Elite Dangerous because it's already out, and secondly, the galaxy is the same scale as our solar system. Yeah. Of soul.
Is that true?
That's true.
I mean, if you come to me and you're like, Rob, I want a game where, I don't know, I like music. Maybe you're like you want a game where you just like sort of like figure out puzzles and music going into it. I would say Sintris is a great game for you, because that's a game where you are basically filling in sort of this puzzle, these color tiles that are coming together, but each color tile has sort of a different sound to it and a different shape. And like, as you're filling in like the different slots and the holes, as you're filling in this ring, the sounds that you're sort of creating like create this music, and then you get like sort of this like feeling to it. And maybe you're like, well, maybe I don't want to like make music. Maybe I just want to like play with a game that's like has like really cool music that goes along with it. And I'm like, okay, sure, let's go to Sound Dodger, where it's this game where you're just avoiding different bullets that are coming at you in the middle of this arena, but it's done in a very beautiful sort of minimalist style going into it. I mean, the thing is, like...
Okay, let me answer your question, though. What kind of game am I looking for personally? I like horror games.
Dark Echo.
I like smart horror games. That's what I like.
If you like horror games, then you should try out Dark Echo. It's an iPad, iPhone game. They're working on it for the PC right now. It is a game where you don't see anything. Basically, all you see is your 2 feet, your footsteps. You're looking down at everything. And by...
Oh, and it's all played through sound, right? Yeah, I played that game.
Yeah, there you go.
How about that?
And so you can actually see, but the thing is, like,
awesome.
It is in a like it's an immense game. It is 80 some levels going into it, where you are trying to outsmart and outwit these different monsters that can only find you through sound. And so you're sneaking around, you're finding things out, you're doing things like that. I mean, there's also, there's like, what kind of horror games? Like, what do you like about horror games?
I've played a game called The Static Speaks My Name. Have you heard of this game?
A little bit.
It's a very short horror game, but very effectively scary and weird.
Okay,
and creepy.
Then I know what you want. To play Year Walk.
I was just about to say that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Year Walk is a great game. It's done by a group. Always mess up their names. It's like Smigo.
They're from Norway.
Yeah, and they do really great games. Also, Device 6. Actually, you would really dig.
Oh, I like Device 6 a lot.
Yeah,
Device 6 is fantastic. That's like that puzzle thing on the iPad.
Well,
it's the same
thing. Well, not the same thing, but it's the same people. So Year Walk is actually based on a real folklore where you can see your future if you go on a quest. You know, basically, a walk. So you starve yourself for 24 hours, and then at midnight you walk out to the grave, to the church. You walk around the graves of the church, and then you get visions. You get visions of the future, such as, like, you can see everyone who gets married the next year, or you get to see who dies the next year. And the whole idea is that you get to see 1 year into the future because of this. And so you go on this quest, and as you're going through this quest, you also interact with other folklore, and you interact with actual other sort of like deities or like spirits that are actually a part of like the whole Norway Finnish sort of folklore that goes into it. And it actually comes with like two things. So there's the iPad game that has it, and there's also a free iPhone app that you use along with it that tells you the story behind everything that you're seeing going into it. But the thing is that there's a lot more connectivity between the iPhone and the iPad app than it lets on, and that you sort of don't, like any sort of like good horror story, you don't see like how it all sort of comes together until the very end of everything. And it comes in together as this very beautiful and this very like very dark sort of way going into it. And once it's all revealed, you just have like a moment where you just sort of catch your breath and was like, oh my God, I've been doing this the whole time.
Yeah. It's very sad. I heard about this game through the YouTuber Markiplier. Yeah. He plays a lot of horror games, so I don't have to, because I can't stand horror games. But YouTubers like Markiplier play a big role into getting some indie game names out there, because they have the finances to just purchase up any new game that they see, and any new game that pretty much appears on the front page of Steam. I think that plays a large part into indie success, financially speaking.
I mean, it does definitely. I mean, obviously, Five Nights at Freddy's sort of helps going into it. But like, I mean, even with like Markiplier, he like his first, like what he was first known for was like, what was it, Crazy Wheels, something like that, and that was like a
Happy Wheels.
That was it,
I
Happy
think.
Wheels,
yeah.
And that's a browser game. That's all it is. It's just a browser game. He makes like funny noises like when things happen. He's great.
Yeah,
he's absolutely fantastic. I watched a lot of his Five Nights at Freddy's playthroughs, and he can play that game like no one's business. When it really comes down to it, I really salute him for like doing like the top level versions run throughs of those games. But yeah, I mean, that really comes down to what you're talking about, really comes down to discovery and like how people actually like find games, because a lot of people do watch, you know, different YouTubers, different mm-hmm. channels, things like that, because we have so many games out there now and so much like really good stuff that's coming down the pipeline that we're just not covering or just not talking about in the same way that we talk about anything that's sort of like a AAA or that's being pushed by like a bigger publisher going into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've certainly discovered a few games through Markiplier, Game Grumps, and Steam Train through their like support for indie development. Like they'll just say like, hey, send us a game and we'll play it on our channel, and they do, and you know that's how I find out about it. So I look into it for myself, because there's a difference between watching and playing that really intrigues me.
Sure.
So,
it's understandable. Was there a particular game that you could think of that you picked up from them?
Electronic Superjoy.
Yes, Electronic Superjoy. That's a great. That's a tough platformer, but it has like a great sort of sound and beat to it that goes along with it.
Yeah. I really like the use of color, the art design, if you will, how it's just like everything is black and pixelated. but like everything in the background is bright, colorful, and just candy like.
Before it like crushes your soul with every death that you have to go through.
I mean, I played all the way through Super Meat Boy, I can take a few hits.
Excellent. Excellent. I mean, like, what kind of games do you like? I mean, is that your thing, like platformers?
Me? Yeah. I like all kinds, really. I love games that do, like, something different. Like I said earlier, like, I like the sort of renaissance of the late 90s, early 2000s. My favorite game of all time is Jet Grind Radio, because that game is just, like, unlike anything I've ever seen before. It has, like, the best soundtrack ever. It was the first game to be fully cel-shaded. It used graffiti to like the best like use possible, because it's just so,
and it's the only time in all of human history that rollerblades were actually cool.
Yeah, like I wanted to pick up wanted to pick up a pair of roller skates because of Jet Grind Radio, but I lacked coordination and balance, so that never took off. I also lacked artistic skills because I couldn't tag graffiti. So, but I just really liked that game because it was, I don't know, I don't want to be racist, and whenever someone says that, they're about to be racist.
Right.
No, exactly.
But that game was so Japanese, I fell in love with it.
Sure.
Because like it was like bright, it was vibrant, sure. It was loud, it was boisterous, it was obnoxious, and I loved every single second of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic. Have you played Zenith?
I have not heard of
it. It's a free downloadable game. Look it up. It's by the Arcane Kids, and it's one of their first sort of games starting out, and it's very much like Jet Grind Radio. But imagine like an immense desert that you're sort of exploring with these like really arcane structures that you're trying to get through, and the whole purpose is that you're trying to skate your way to this rocket that's being launched into the moon.
Okay, are you tagging your turf along the way with awesome graffiti?
No, unfortunately not. But you do happen.
Is there a pirate radio station led by a awesome black dude with crazy dreads that bounced to the beat?
No, unfortunately not. But
then I want nothing to do with it.
You're a purist. That's what Scott is.
But no, what was that game again? Zenith. Could you spell that out?
Zenith.
Z-E-N-I-T-H.
Yes.
Okay, Zenith.
There you go, Zenith.
Okay. Going into it.
Well, we are at the zenith of our program, I feel, right now.
Wow, way to wrap that up.
That works.
How about that, huh? That's professionalism. That's what that's called.
All right.
So, yes. Mr. Rob Manuel.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being with us.
I enjoyed it.
That was a really...
We liked having
that
you.
That was fun. I hope that you'll come back again, because this was a very interesting conversation. And I'm sure that we can talk about more indie games and just more stuff.
Of course. I mean, so, we didn't even talk about all the games that are coming out. We didn't talk about like even some of the other stuff that's popping around. So yeah, of course.
Yeah,
anytime.
Totally.
Right on, Rob.
Thanks so much for having me on.
And if you like today's podcast, let us know. Send us a tweet at @oldgeekyounggeek on Twitter, or send us an email at oldgeekyounggeek@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
I'm back, I'm back, I'm cool with Cyrus and a tear on me. No ghost, no 16-bit like Sega Genesis. RG ball on the board, soundtrack on the track, Gemini on the job, Sailor G on the G, set green for the green free chillin', and I'm back on my thing for the listeners.